private operators. Although virtually no one knew his real name or the fact that he worked for Fitzroy, the Gray Man had become a legend amongst covert operators across the Western world. As with any legend, many of the details were enhanced, enriched, or wholly fabricated. One of the details of the myth of the Gray Man that was true, however, was his personal ethic to only accept contracts against targets that he felt had earned the punishment of extrajudicial execution. This was entirely novel in the world of killers for hire, and though it enhanced his reputation, it also caused him to be extremely choosy about his operations. Gentry took the toughest of the tough ops, went into bandit country alone, faced legions of enemies, and built a reputation and a bank account that was unrivaled in his admittedly low-profile industry. In 4 years, he had satisfactorily performed 12 operations against terrorists and terrorist paymasters, white slavery profiteers, drug and illegal weapons runners, and Russian mafia kingpins. Rumor had it he'd already made more money than he could ever need, so the inference was that he did what he did for the purpose of righting wrongs, protecting the weak, making the world a better place through the muzzle of his gun. The myth was a fantasy, not reality, but unlike most fantasies, the man at the center of this one did exist. His motivations were complex, not the comic book stimuli that had been ascribed to him, but at his core, he did consider himself one of the good guys. No, he didn't need the money, nor did he have a death wish. Court Gentry was the Gray Man simply because he believed there existed bad men in this world who truly needed to die. Lloyd and his two Northern Irish henchmen put Fitzroy into a Laurent Group limousine and motored through the city in a driving rain. There was no conversation. Fitzroy sat quietly, holding his hat in his hands between his knees, looking out the window into the rainy night like a beaten man. Lloyd worked his mobile phone, making and taking call after call, constantly checking in with Regal, who was contacting men all over the globe to set their rushed plan into motion. The limo arrived at Laurent Group's UK subsidiary just after 1 a.m. The French corporation's local office was housed in a 3-building campus in Fulham. Lloyd, his men, and their cargo rolled through the front gates, past 2 rings of guards and guns, and down a road towards a single-story structure alongside a helipad. "This will be home for a while, Sir Donald. I apologize if it's not up to the standards of that to which you are accustomed, but at least you won't go wanting for company. My men and I will not leave your side until we get everything settled and we can take you back to Bayswater Road and put you right back where we found you with a pat on your bald head." Fitzroy said nothing. He followed the entourage through the rain into the building and down a long hallway. He passed 2 more men in suits standing in a little kitchen, and he immediately identified them as plainclothed security officers. For a moment, Fitzroy had a flicker of hope, and it showed on his face. Lloyd read his thoughts. "Sorry, Sir Donald. These are not your boys. A couple of heavies from our Edinburgh office. These Scotsmen hold allegiance to me, not you." Fitzroy continued down the hall. He mumbled,
"I know 1,000 chaps like that. Those blokes hold no allegiance. They're in it for the money, and they will turn on you if the price is right."
Lloyd waved a card key over a reader alongside the last door in the hall. "Well then, lucky for me I pay so well." It was a large conference room with an oak table and high-backed chairs, the walls lined with flat-screen monitors, computers, and a big LCD display showing a map of Western Europe. Lloyd said,
"Why don't you take the head of the table? Considering your knighthood, I apologize we couldn't arrange something round for you. I'm afraid oval was the best we could manage."
The American chuckled at his own joke. The 2 Scottish security men took places near the door, and the Northern Irishman found corners in which to stand. A thin black man in a chestnut-brown suit entered and sat at the table with a bottle of water in front of him.
Mr. Felix works for President Abu Bakr, Lloyd explained. It was far short of an introduction. He's here to verify we killed the gray man.
Mr. Felix nodded to Fitzroy from across the table. Lloyd conferred with a young man with a ponytail and a nose ring whose thickly rimmed glasses reflected the light from the computers on the desk in front of him. He looked up to Lloyd and whispered. Lloyd turned to Sir Donald.
Everything is on schedule. This man will be in charge of all communication between the Watchers, the Hunters, and myself. We will call him the Tech.
The young man stood and proffered a hand politely, as if he had no idea he was being introduced to a kidnapping victim. Fitzroy turned away. Just then, the Tech took a call in his headset. He spoke softly to Lloyd in a British accent. Lloyd replied,
"Perfect. Get assets there immediately. Pin down his location."
Lloyd smiled at Fitzroy.
"It was time I had a little luck. Gentry was spotted in Tbilisi, boarding a plane to Prague. The flight has already landed, so we can't tail him from the airport, but we have men checking the hotels. Hopefully, we'll have a hit team there waiting for him when he gets up in the morning."
An hour later, Lloyd sat at the table opposite Fitzroy. The lights were dimmed, and the Tech placed a backlight behind the American. A camera on the ceiling spun under motor power to face him. A monitor displayed a silhouette of Lloyd, so obscured that the young attorney had to lift his arm in the air in a wave to be sure he was looking at himself in real time. Next, one by one, LCD screens along the wall across the table came to life. At the bottom of each screen were a title and the local time. Luanda, Botswana was first online. Four men sat in a conference room similar to the one in England. They were backlit and in silhouette similar to Lloyd. Then Jakarta, Indonesia came up. This time, there were six dark figures sitting shoulder to shoulder at a table and looking at a monitor. Then Tripoli, Libya. A minute later, Caracas, Venezuela. Pretoria, South Africa, and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, all illuminated simultaneously. Within the next 5 minutes, the feeds from Albania, Sri Lanka, Kazakhstan, and Bolivia were up and running. Freetown, Liberia took another minute for the Tech to patch through. Finally, the transmission from South Korea appeared. A single Asian man sat alone at a desk. These were the government kill teams Kurt Riegel had arranged for the hunt. Riegel had already spoken to the head of each team's agency, so he declined speaking to the operators directly. That was Lloyd's job. As Riegel had said, he was just helping with arrangements and consultation. Before the audio came online, Lloyd called across the room to the Tech.
"Where are the rest of the Koreans?"
The Tech checked a paper on his desk quickly.
"They just sent one guy. Don't guess it will matter, all in all. There are over 50 men total on the 12 teams.
The Tech next assured Lloyd his voice would be altered with both hardware and software to make it completely unrecognizable. After a final moment for the Tech to check the audio link with the translators sitting off camera in each location that needed them, Lloyd cleared his throat. His silhouette brought a hand to his mouth and then lowered it.
"Gentlemen, I know you have been briefed in general about the mission we have for you. It's very simple, really. I need a man found, but that is not your problem. I have nearly 100 pavement artists either on call or already on the job combing the area of operations at this very moment. Once found, I will need this man neutralized. This will be your objective."
The image in the monitors at the 12 remote locations changed. A color photo of a clean-shaven court gentry in a sport coat and wire-rimmed glasses appeared on the screen. Lloyd had taken it from a forged passport in his CIA file.
"This is the gray man, court gentry. The photograph before you is 5 years old. I am afraid I do not know how he might have changed his appearance. Don't let his normalcy fool you. He was the best scalp hunter who ever worked for the CIA.
Someone mumbled something in Spanish. Lloyd understood only one word. Milosevic.
Yes, I thought some of you may already know this man by his reputation. Rumors abound regarding his operations. Some say he killed Milosevic. Some say he did not. Some say he was responsible for the events in Kiev last year. Most reasonable minds recognize that to be impossible. Nevertheless, I know enough about specific jobs that he has carried out, both working for the U.S. government as well as his private work, to assure you Mr. Gentry is the most formidable singleton operator you will ever encounter. A new disembodied voice spoke.
Looks like a faggot.
From the accent, Lloyd immediately turned his attention to the South African feed. Lloyd's altered voice reverberated through the speakers. He will be the faggot who walks right up to you and slips an ice pick between your ribs, pops your lung, and stands above you while you choke to death on your own blood. There was anger in the American lawyer's voice. You kill him, and then you can tell me what a fucking joke he is. Until you kill him, you keep your goddamn juvenile comments to yourself. The South African feed fell silent. Lloyd continued, still glaring at the silhouettes in Pretoria. The gray man is trained in long-distance sniping, in close-quarters battle, in edged weapons, Krav Maga, the martial art used by Israeli special forces. He can kill with a long gun, a short gun, or no gun at all. He can take you out from a mile away, or you can die with his breath in your ear. He has extensive training in explosive ordnance and even poisons. There was a rumor going around the CIA that once in Lahore, Pakistan, he used a blowgun to take down a target in a restaurant while he went unnoticed by the target's security detail. Lloyd paused for effect. Gentry was at the next table, kept right on eating his meal as the target dropped dead. As soon as we finish here, you will all board aircraft. We will send a dozen teams in a dozen planes to a dozen airports along the route we expect Gentry to take across Europe in the next 48 hours. I will oversee and coordinate the activities from here, and I will pass on any intelligence I may be able to obtain. Each team that takes part in the hunt and survives will be paid $1 million plus any expenses incurred. The team that kills Gentry will be paid a bonus of $20 million.
What's America going to do if we kill him?
Asked a man with a booming African voice. Lloyd turned to the Liberian feed, but he was not certain. This has been addressed by the leaders of your organizations. This man is already marked for death by the U.S. government. There is shoot-on-sight sanction at the CIA. He has no friends, no close family. No one on this earth will cry for him when he dies. Next, someone spoke in an Asian language. When he finished, a translator asked,
Where is he now?
He flew to Prague last night. I have our agents asking around at hotels for him, but there is no way to know if he is still there.
Which team is being sent to Prague?
Someone asked.
The Albanians. They are closest.
That's hardly fair, shouted a South African.
Lloyd, in silhouette, took off his glasses and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
No offense to the Albanians, but I don't think the first team he encounters will be the one that gets him.
There was grumbling on the Albanian feed, but it was quickly extinguished with hisses.
We will kill Gentry in the next 2 days, yes, but we will likely do it through attrition. Many of you may die.
He paused a beat, a half-hearted attempt to act like he gave a shit.
That said, we don't know that the Albanians will get the first crack at him. He may well have moved west by the time your plane lands. If that is the case, if we do pick up his trail past Prague, we will put you back on your plane, and you will take up a new ambush point closer to the final destination. There is no clear advantage to being farthest east, I assure everyone.
Lloyd sat up straighter in his chair. His silhouette appeared thin but athletic.
Let me finish by saying this. Do what it takes to get the job done. I could not possibly care less about collateral damage. If you can't stomach a few dead kids or dead pensioners or dead puppy dogs, then don't get on my goddamn airplane. Your job is to kill Court Gentry. Do that,
and you will make millions for your organization and garner the thanks of the Central Intelligence Agency. Fail, and you will most likely die by his hand. You would be well served to avoid worrying about anything else. Any questions? There were none. Then, gentlemen, game on. At 4:15 in the morning, a Laurent Group security officer from the firm's massive truck farm in Brno, Czech Republic, showed Gentry's photo to a sleepy hotel desk clerk at a narrow four-story inn in the Staré Město, the old town of Prague. The old man behind the hotel counter looked at the photo for a long time, said he could not be sure, but upon taking payment of 500 crowns from the beady-eyed stranger, he changed his tone. He was certain the clean-shaven man in the picture and the bearded tourist in his attic room were one and the same. The surveillance agent called Lloyd immediately. He was an employee of Laurent Group, and Lloyd was under strict orders to keep company people away from any direct action, so Lloyd instructed him to go home. "A team is on the way," Lloyd said.
"If you meet him dead, I'll do it for 100,000 crowns.
Lloyd chuckled into the phone.
"No, you won't."
"Are you saying I can't handle?"
"Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying."
"Fucking American prick."
"I'm the fucking American prick who just saved your worthless Czech life. Go home. Forget. You will receive a bonus for your good work."
"I hate Americans."
Lloyd laughed out loud as the line went dead. Chapter 10. Gentry awoke at 5 in the morning. The bullet wound in his thigh stung and throbbed. It had been anything but a good night's rest. He sat up slowly and painfully, leaned forward to stretch his lower back and hamstrings, stood, and tilted hard to each side. He wanted to spend the day moving. He had not yet decided on a destination, but he knew the sooner he left the hotel, the better. After a quick trip to the bathroom to relieve himself and check the dressing on his leg, he dressed in the same clothing as the night before. He then looked out the window for signs of surveillance. Finding nothing amiss, he descended the stairs and left the building at 25 minutes past the hour. He had created a mental to-do list for the day. 1, go to his local cache here in Prague and retrieve a small handgun. He would not be doing any more flying. The plane trips of the last 24 hours were an anomaly in his life, because Court hated to be unarmed. He only boarded commercial aircraft as a last resort, had flown no more than a dozen times in the past 4 years. Now, as he walked unarmed through the darkened and deserted cobblestone streets of Prague, he felt naked. The only consolation to his martial needs was a small Spyderco folding knife in his waistband that he'd bought off a Kurdish policeman. It was better than nothing, but inferior to any sort of firearm. After hitting his cash, he'd need to get out of town, pay cash for a cheap motorcycle, and just buzz on out of Prague. Maybe spend a week or so moving from village to village in the Czech Republic or Slovakia. He hoped this would keep him safe until the Nigerian president left office and, hopefully, left him in peace. No one could disappear more quickly or cleanly than the 36-year-old American. As Court walked towards the subway, he decided to place one more important item at the front of his to-do list. He smelled fresh coffee wafting from a little cafe just opening. And at that moment, he felt he needed coffee as much as he needed a gun. He was wrong. A dense fog filled the dark street in front of the cafe, and it began to rain just as Court climbed up a pair of steps and entered the tiny eatery. It was just 5:30. He had the impression he was the first customer of the day. Court knew enough Czech to extend a greeting to the young girl behind the counter. He pointed to a steaming urn of coffee and a large pastry, watched the pale-skinned girl pour a foam cup full of rich black brew and place his breakfast in a bag. Just then, the doorbell dinged behind him. He glanced back to see 3 men enter, close umbrellas, and shake fresh rain from their coats. They looked local, but Court could not be sure. The first man glanced up at him as Gentry took his purchases over to a tiny stand with milk and sugar to dress his coffee. Court looked at a glass-covered flyer promoting a poetry reading that hung on the wall, gazed idly at the window at his right, towards the dark and rainy street. A few seconds later, he was out in the elements, ignoring the cold morning shower and walking towards the metro station at Moustek. There were no other pedestrians around. The cold and the rain and the early hour saw to that. Court did not mind the frigid air. He appreciated its ability to inject life into his tired muscles and still fatigued brain. A few delivery trucks were about, and Gentry looked into the wet windshields of each as they passed. He found the entrance to the metro and descended the steep stairs. His still tired eyes adjusted slowly to the harsh electric lighting around him, the cold, white tile reflecting the illumination from above. He followed signs down a winding tunnel towards the trains. Another escalator took him deeper below the sleepy city, and another turn took him even farther into the brightly lit bowels of the metro station. Shortly before a right turn in the passage, he passed a garbage can.